Sadie Giadalid. The beginning of the line, three lines up from the bottom. And what we're addressing is what happens in the case in which somebody borrows money and the lender doesn't make a claim. The lender doesn't say to him, I want you to pay me back. So the question now is, what's the level of responsibility of the borrower? Does he have to track down the lender, or can he say, well, you know, he didn't come to me, I guess that means that this is a gift, or he's forgiving me. How does that exactly work? So, last time, we saw it before. There's no one here, Gerald. There's no one there. Just books. The Coach's Codes, I should say. So, last time, we saw the view that this could be viewed as mechila in limbo, forgiveness in limbo, in the sense that we don't know whether the fellow has forgiven the debt or not. I'm just looking for a page for Gerald. Oh, here it is. We don't know whether he has forgiven the debt or not, but since he hasn't made a claim, since he hasn't come and said, I want you to pay me back, he may be able to contend that he has in fact forgiven it. So, if you take a look, three lines up from the bottom, beginning of the line on page Yudalad, Ube'erach Shai. Okay, the Erech Shai is a sefer that he enjoys quoting quite a bit, on financial issues. Ube'erach Shai Simen Ayin Gimel Seif Beis Kasa B'Shem Shut Maharach Or Zeruah. He quotes the Or Zeruah, who is a Rishon, an early authority, I think 12th or 13th century, if I remember correctly. B'Meshakasa B'Yerushalmi Sof Shviyas, regarding a line that's found in the Talmud Yerushalmi, not the Babli, the Babylonian Talmud, but the Jerusalem Talmud, at the end of the volume known as Shviyas. And this is the quote. Hamalva es chavero almanas shalo letov o, Shviyas meshamtaso. If you lend somebody money, and it is loaned on condition that you are not going to make a claim. In other words, you say to the fellow, I'm lending you the money. The money's due, you know, when this date arrives, whatever it is, but I'm not going to make a claim on you. Shemitah will still cancel the debt. Why would I have thought Shemitah would not cancel the debt? Because the Torah phrases this when it talks about the nullification of debts in the Shemitah year. It says, Lo yigos es reyehu. Don't oppress others. So here, he's not oppressing him. He's not coming to him demanding payment. He declared a condition of the loan. I am not going to oppress you. So I might have thought that as a consequence, the loan would not be nullified by Shemitah because he's not doing anything anyway. Here, there's no one sitting in this chair. It's just a couple of goats. We can move them. So nonetheless, the Gemara there says that the loan is not that the loan does not survive Shemitah. The loan is canceled by Shemitah. That's the passage in the Yerushalmi. So on that, the loan is a bona fide loan for sure. Sorry?
Because it can be canceled.
Well, correct. But more than that, it's that I don't care about whether you make the claim or don't make the claim. We view it as though you've made the claim. And that's why Shemitah is going to do it. In other words, even though I am not going to come to the borrower and say, pay me back, we view it as though there is this demand hanging over his head. That's why Shemitah is going to nullify. So not only is it a bona fide loan, it's a bona fide claim, which is going to have ramifications for us, because the question is, if the lender does not come back to the borrower and say, pay me, does the borrower need to pay or not? It sounds like, from this, the borrower still has to pay, which is why Shemitah will cancel such a debt. So take a look. He says the Or Zeruah writes on that Vehiksha. The Or Zeruah challenged it. Mehad Shabbos Reish Perak Shoel. Dilaman de Omer Havas Yom Tov Lo Nitna Li Tava. Ein Shvius Mishametas. Kevin de Lo Karina Ve Lo Yigos. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about a loan that originates on Yom Tov, and the question of whether you are allowed to claim a loan that was originated on Yom Tov. Can you claim payment of that loan? And there we say that it is not up for claim. The reason why you're not allowed to claim it, what do you think the reason would be? Why do you think the Gemara says that that you're not allowed to claim a debt that's originated on Yom Tov? It's 100% valid. That's not the problem.
You'd be encouraging letters on
that. Nope. The problem with claiming debts that originate on Yom Tov is that that will then encourage people to write them down. If I know I can claim it, then I'm going to record a document. That's what we're afraid of. So therefore, they say, you can't claim it anyway. If he pays you back, he pays you back. And if not, not. That's just the way it goes.
Is the making of the loan at all forbidden even without the claiming? Like,
no.
The act of making
There's nothing wrong with extending the loan in the first place. So because you can't claim it, though, and this is the key, because you can't claim it, the Gemara there says, Ein Shvi'is Meshamedes. Shmita does not cancel the loan. Okay, so here I have one example of a loan you're not going to claim, where you said, I'm not going to claim it, and you said, Shmita nullifies it anyway, because it's like you're claiming it. And then we have a second case of a loan you can't claim, because it was a loan that was originated on Yom Tov, and there we say, Shmita does not cancel it. Came into Karina Belo, he goes, because it's not called oppressing him. There is no oppression. So I don't understand. What's the rule now? Clearly, the key criterion is not, am I claiming it or am I not claiming it? Because I have two cases in which that is the same. I'm not claiming it. And in one case, Shemitah nullifies it, and in the other case, Shemitah does not nullify it. So what is my defining characteristic? What determines whether Shemitah nullifies it or not? So there, he says, it continues, Be'oda, and further, we're at the bottom of Yudalah, the last few words. Why is that any different from somebody who extends a loan for 10 years? Where we say that Shemitah does not cancel it. Meaning, because the rule is, lo yigos, flip it over here. Actually, no, don't flip it over. That's Yitzhayim. You don't have it on the back of this one? Because the rule is that your loan is only canceled by Shemitah at a time when you are oppressing the other party. In the event that you extend a loan, and it's not due until after Shemitah is over, it's a 10-year loan. Okay, let's pretend Shemitah comes up in year 5 or whatever it is. The point is, it's not collectible yet. That's why Shemitah isn't going to cancel the debt. Right? It's just like the loan that originated on Yom Tov that you're not going to claim now. It's stronger than that because now there really is no obligation to pay because it's a 10-year loan. It's not due yet. But the point is, the Gemara, the Or Zeruah wants to know, what is our defining rule here? And so he writes, V'tirei, the top line on Tesvav, he explains the following. This is a tricky word. You have to read it as de v'chi. Okay? The dalet is sort of a prefix before the following quote. V'chi mipnei sha'omar lo et ba'acha asur lo litov. Oh. In the case in which the guy says, I'm extending you a loan and I'm not going to claim payment from you, does that actually prevent him from making the claim? Right? I go to Chaim and I say, Chaim, I know that you want to make an investment and you need the money. Chaim, I'm going to lend you the money. And I'm not even going to demand it from you. Okay, the loan is due January 1st, 2017. Which happens to be after Shemitah. But in any case, that's what I say to Chaim. Okay? Nothing prevents me from deciding at some point, you know what? On January 1st, 2017, I am going to go to him to claim it. Leave aside Shemitah as an issue. Nothing prevents me from going to Chaim and saying, I'm going to claim it. It's not like I'm bound by some vow or some conditional contract that says, this loan is only valid so long as you don't claim it. It doesn't invalidate the loan in any way. I haven't violated anything by making the claim. It's not as though I had to force Chaim to accept the loan from me, and he's going to say, well, now I regret having taken the loan. So,
but how did you say you went there to claim?
I simply made the statement. I said, here, I'm lending you this money, and I'm not going to claim it from you. You know, it's due on such and such a date, and, you know, pay me when you can. I'm not going to come to you to make a claim. So he says, V'avim nadar shalo litvoa. Not only that, he makes it even stronger. He says, even if you take a vow saying, I am not going to claim payment of the debt, Eino ela the Bal Yachel. So then I am in violation of the rule of Bal Yachel, which says, don't make your words mundane. Honor your vows. So you're right, I didn't honor my vow. But the loan is still valid. End of quote. So the Or Zeruah's resolution is to say that the difference between the Yom Tov case and the case in which I simply say I'm not going to make a claim is that in the Yom Tov case I'm not allowed to claim it. In the case where I made a statement, that doesn't prevent me from claiming it. Ad kan, end of quote. That's his. That's the position of the Or Zeruah. V'kasa be'erach shai. So the Erach Shai then writes, Al pi divrei Maharam, and here he's talking about the Maharam Rotenberg. Sheim Omar lo et va'acha. In it's Maram Bar Baruch. I think the bed is Bar Baruch, but it's Maram Rotenberg. Shim Omar lo et ba'acha. Eino lashon mechila. So the Or Zeruah, the only piece of the Or Zeruah that we care about, is his explanation of what someone means when he says, "I am not going to claim." The fact that he says that's not a binding condition upon him. It's simply a nice declaration. So he says, if the guy says, "I'm not going to claim it from you," eino lashon mechila. That's not forgiving the debt. Va'afilo tav'o. And even if he doesn't make a demand for payment, chayav midinei shamayim, the borrower is still going to have a moral obligation to pay. So now let's apply that back to our conversation about the debtor whose creditor doesn't come back to him and say, "Pay me." Hakinami, here too. Kishahamar lo betchilas halva shalo yitbami menu. When he says at the beginning of the loan, "I'm not going to demand it from you," ein ze mechilas mamon. That is not called forgiving the money. I ain't shams in the discussion there. Lefi ze nira. So based on this, it appears. Then how much more so if he didn't say anything in the beginning of the loan? He didn't say, "I'm not going to claim it from you." But just automatically, he didn't make the claim. There is no forgiveness of the debt. Certainly from the laws of heaven, as a moral obligation, he's going to have to pay the debt. And he says, see later on, we're going to get to it in a little bit, regarding a person who swears that he will pay, does he need to make a, does the lender need to make a claim in order for the oath to be triggered? But the point is, to summarize this, it's really piggybacking on a discussion we had last week. But our question was, what is the status of a loan when the creditor does not actively claim it? And the position that the Erech Shai puts forward here is that there is at least a moral obligation to pay, if not a financial obligation to pay, as seen in the fact that we say that the loan extended before Shemitah, that where the creditor says, "I'm not going to claim it from you," is still voided by Shemitah, because saying, "I'm not going to claim it from you," does not nullify the debt and does not mean that you won't claim it. You still have the right to go to him and claim it. There's no forgiveness of the debt that has taken place by virtue of your saying, "I'm not going to claim it from you." So that's the position of Erech Shai.
Whether the lender explicitly or implicitly makes that statement.
Correct. Doesn't make a difference, even with the explicit statement.
What seems to be a tax strategy where you can give a loan and essentially forgive it down the road instead of a gift or a tax benefit. So how would that be structured in this case without having to be talking to the Shemai to actually pay back?
So that's an interesting question. He discussed that a little bit in the very beginning of this series, when he talked about giving tzedakah to somebody who doesn't want to accept it. Right? You want to help somebody out, but they're proud. So you say to them, "Okay, I'll lend it to you." And what you're thinking to yourself is, "I'm never demanding this. I don't want it back. I want it to be a gift. If he comes back to me one day and he has money, so fine, he'll pay me back." And the concern that he voiced there in the Pesach Choshen commentary on this idea is that what you're really doing potentially is lifnei iver, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, because this person accepts it as a loan. And he obligates himself to pay you back, and then he doesn't pay you back. So you're setting him up for violating the obligation to stick to your word, to pay debts, and so on. So the solution that he offers in that case is that the way you say it to him is, "This is a loan, this is a gift. In the event that you can pay me back, please pay me back by such and such a date," and that's fine. But you tell him up front that you're not demanding payment. And that way, hopefully he still accepts it, but that way he's not breaking any rules if he doesn't pay back. Now, I don't know about for your tax case whether that's going to be acceptable.
Because here it seems happens that even in the case where you say explicitly you're not going to be claiming it, you still have to do the Shemai.
Yes. I'm a little surprised to hear that works from a tax perspective.
There's a way of giving to children or something in a way that you're structured as a law.
The reason I say that is because I had a rabbi consult me on a question just like this. Except a little different. Sort of like this. The question he had was, again, like you're describing, a father wanted to give a gift to his son. And the problem that he had is that in the state where he lived, and I think it was a state law, not federal, in order for it to qualify as a loan, you had to charge interest. Because that would be the defining point which would make it clear that it's not a gift. In other words, an interest-free loan would be viewed as a gift. And therefore, he would have all the taxes that are associated with the gift. So his problem was, how can I do this, you know, legitimately with my child from a halakhic perspective, from a tax law perspective? But if they're savvy enough to recognize that an interest-free loan is a gift, then how would they permit you to give a loan that you forgive?
There is a nominal interest rate.
There's got to be something there.
Eventually, the whole thing would be forgiven anyway.
I don't know either. That brings him now to a separate point, which begins at the large word ubisi'iv, six lines down on page Tesvav. This is the topic of a fine for someone who does not pay on time when no claim has been made. This is the way we structured our loan. Okay? I lent somebody money, and I said to him, the due date is November 1st. In the event that you haven't paid me by December 1st, a fine will be triggered. You will now owe me $1,000, whatever it is, as a fine for not having paid on time. Comes November 1st, and I don't make a claim. Right? This is what companies do all the time. Right? They don't make the claim on time. They wait until the fine is triggered, and at that point they'll come back to you. I had that one of the first times I moved. I had some credit card that somehow or other I had missed the forwarding thing or something. I don't know how, but they waited until a good amount of money had accumulated before they tracked me down, as though it had been very difficult to find me. I had moved two blocks away in the same area. There was mail forwarding, like whatever. I'm still bitter. But the point is, what happens if you have such an arrangement? Because you didn't make the claim. And maybe he took that as having forgiven the debt. Is the fine triggered? So the first question, which Chaim is going to ask, is, hey, how can you get away with that at all? Right? What's your problem, Chaim? With this fine?
With this fine? Well,
isn't that charging interest? Right. What do you mean, fining him for late payment? That means he's now going to pay you back more than you lent him. So why is this legitimate at all? So the answer is, you actually can do this. This actually does work. If you take a look, I'm just a little bit surprised for myself, because I see I brought three. I prepared this sheet a while ago, but I see that I brought three sources on the sheet, and we haven't discussed them. We're already up into source number. We're already at source Dalet. Nonetheless, I'm sure the first three sources were interesting. I can't think what. That's funny. Okay, fine. I know what that relates to. It relates to a discussion about when you have someone you hire. Oh, I see why. It's going to be relevant here. We didn't get there yet. Okay, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to jump sources on the sheet to source Dalet, because Dalet and Hay are Dalet at any rate is an immediate question. Yeah, that's the way we used to do it. The question that Chaim asks is, why isn't this ribis? Why isn't this a problem of lending money and receiving back more than you gave? So the Shulchan Aruch clarifies for us in source Dalet. Ha'omer lachavero, if someone says to somebody else, im lo efracha lizman ploni, if I don't pay you back by X time, harini chayev lachame achshav, then I owe you from now. Okay? Ulizman ha'ikuv, I'm sorry, me'achshav ulizman ha'ikuv, I'm liable to you from now, for the time when I delay payment, kach dinar, in a certain amount of money. Okay? Which the Rama is Yosef Mashil Vahu over and above what actually was lent. Asur Mipnei Ha'aramas Rivis. So that is prohibited because it's just a clever way to get interest into the loan. Right? I know I can't do interest free loans. So I say, okay, so there's a late payment penalty, and wink wink, the borrower is simply gonna pay me late. And therefore, he'll be able to give me the late payment, and therefore, he will have paid me rivis. You follow?
Yeah, but that's at the that implies that the borrower is going to pay late. If the borrower pays on time, there is no rivis.
Correct. This
there's
is
no fee. There's no discussion of rivis. It's at the whether to pay the fine is at the borrower's option, which
correct.
Is different than if it was actually real interest or real rivis.
Correct. Now, this is not what we would call ribis kitzutza, biblical ribis, where it's fixed from the start. However, it is potentially a way that two parties who want to arrange a loan with interest are going to do this to get around the law. And the borrower knows that if he pays on time, that's the last time he's getting a loan. Because, I mean, that's the way it would work. So the Shulchan Aruch isn't a fan of it. But then watch what happens in the second part I bring you in Source Dalet. Siv Tezayin. Im Chiev Atzmo Laseis Lamal Vekach Vekach Bechol Shavua Ba'od Shema Kev Mimenu Harezer Ribis Gamur. If you obligate yourself, saying, for every week that I hold on to the money past the due date, then I will pay you X amount, that's for sure ribis. Remember the definition of ribis, agar natar lei, right? It's payment for him to delay demanding his money, right? And renting his money, essentially. So that's no good. But then, hagav, the Rama writes, avagav v'kasav lokach derech kenasa. Even if he writes for him in the manner of a fine, imlo afra l'chalizman ploni etem l'cha kol shavua kach v'kach, saying, if I don't pay you back by X date, then I will give you such and such amount per week. So it's written in the form of a fine. Nonetheless, it's still prohibited. V'avagav dimhaya parei lo bizmano lo havi kan ribis klal. And even though, had he paid back on time, there would have been no ribis at all. Mikomakom still, since he said, I'm giving you a fixed amount every single week, that's full ribis. And that, he says, is the essence. Even though some are lenient, and in fact do this. Some people do actually practice this. So our objection in the Shulchan Aruch here is where he says, in the event that I am late, I'm going to pay you a certain amount per week. So now you tell me, how would you structure it so that you would not be in violation of the ribis rules? So you would be okay. Sorry? No. How can you structure it? Give me the terms that you would employ in order to avoid triggering this ribis objection.
Start up with a greater amount and work your way down. You'd have the maximum amount payable at the end, and then have lesser amounts payable.
The later you go?
No, the earlier you go, the lesser the amount payable.
Interesting.
A discount for early.
Oh, so if you do a discount for early payment, that's fine, but it doesn't take care of the late fee.
Well, the first week is like you'll have the lowest amount. I don't know how creative. No, you'll have the lowest amount.
You create a series of loans that end at specific times that are something else. So, $1,000 for a year, and a specific date, and the guy has not paid you by that date. Lending him $1,010, $1,020, $1,030.
But you never extended that loan for the $1,010. You only extended the $1,000. And when am I lending him the other $10?
It's part of the actual cost. So I add the fee, and then I'm lending him $1,010.
But then I did create a fine. How have I improved? I think I see where you're going. But how have I improved things by doing this? Where's the benefit in legally?
Or so that's one idea. And the other idea is maybe you're saying a percentage of your profits that are something that's resulting in the time value of the money for that.
Then I'm turning it into an investment.
Yes.
Which is a whole, you know, head to risk possibility.
Right.
But we're not dealing in head to risk land. So I'll tell you what I think and what I've seen based on the language that the Shulchan Aruch uses here. The objection is where you tie it to the passage of time. If I'm 1 week late, it's this amount. If I'm 2 weeks late, it's this amount. So what you do is, you come up with a fixed number. In other words, if I haven't paid you by November 1st, I owe you $1,000. It's a fine for paying you for paying late. Flat amount, doesn't change over time. And that's the way that it would be done. And the other piece of it is that you don't tie it to the loan amount. It isn't a percentage. Correct. It's a fine.
$50.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you take 6 months to pay me, or you can take 6 days.
Correct. Once you're late, it doesn't matter.
The fine.
Well, it's everything. Once you're late, you're late. It doesn't make a difference. Yes, that is correct. And that actually triggers another problem, which we're going to reference. Take a look now at what he does with this. Because the question fundamentally is, you created this penalty, right? This balloon payment that's going to be owed in the event that you miss paying the debt. So what happens is there liability to pay this fine in the event that you don't... in the event that the person doesn't make a claim and then the borrower didn't pay. So he writes, "Ubesiv vav sham." Still quoting the Erech Shai. "Hevi ha'Erech Shai midivrei avodas hagirshuni be'echad shalakach scharam echaveiro." The avodas hagirshuni talks about, I think of Shimon Greenfield, but I'm not sure of that. I think I'm confusing two people. But in any case, you find it in the avodas hagirshuni. Be'echad shalakach scharam echaveiro. Somebody purchased merchandise from somebody else. Vihisna imo shim lo yiten ascharo lizman ploni yiten knas. He made a condition that if he doesn't provide the merchandise by X date, he will pay a fine. Parentheses beopen delo havi asmachta. That's a very important parenthesis. In a manner in which it will not be what we call asmachta. Asmachta in this context means a statement a person makes. He depends upon something to happen such that he won't become liable for whatever he's just agreed to. Asmachta means I trust in myself. I don't believe that this thing that I'm committing to is actually going to come to pass. The most famous example of asmachta is the gambling case. When the Gemara talks about why gambling is not an appropriate behavior, one reason that's given is because it doesn't contribute to the general settling of the world, you aren't providing anything for anybody. The second explanation that's offered is that it's asmachta with certain types of gambling, because when you put your money in, you don't actually think you're going to lose. It's a game of skill, not a game of chance. And you think you're better than everybody else. And therefore, when somebody else takes the pot, including your money, they're taking something you never thought you were going to lose. That's the concept of asmachta. You thought that you were going to beat the odds. Everybody thinks they're going to beat the odds. So in terms of the piece here, I borrow money from someone, right? I borrow $10,000 for a period of 5 months. Guy says to me, "Listen, I can't charge you interest, but I don't want you to pay me late. So here's the deal. You pay me at 5 months, it's 10 grand. However, if you miss it, you owe me 20 grand. Right? Some crazy balloon payment, serious enough that there's no way I'm going to want to miss it, right? So he notes in parentheses, you have to make sure that you structure this in such a way that it will not be an asmachta. Right? Because I never think that I'm actually going to end up owing that money. I wouldn't agree to those terms if I thought that I was going to owe that money. Right? If I thought that I was going to hit the balloon payment, I wouldn't take out the loan in the first place. So he's going to have to explain, we won't get to it tonight, we'll get to it, God willing, next time, how you get around the problem of asmachta. You know, how do you assure that that's not a consideration? But in the parentheses here, he just says, by the way, make sure it's not an asmachta. But continuing, he says, exactly.
Let some $1,000, the fine was $1,000, the fine, let some $100,000, the fine was $1 million, there's no way.
Exactly. Right. And how you determine that is not so simple. setting, it isn't only about the ratio of the loan to the fine, but also the party involved, the likelihood he can actually pay that. So he says, in such a case where I buy money, I buy merchandise from someone, I give him the money.
If I understood this matter correctly, though, it would have more to do with the relationship of the loan in relation to all your assets than the penalty. Because your ability to pay it back, or if you were sitting there thinking, is this likely to happen? If you're a millionaire and you'll lend $10, you won't worry about the penalty. Because you know you can pay back $10.
Correct. Correct. No, that is certainly true. That the ability to pay is also going to be a factor.
The size of the fine is irrelevant.
But I'm not sure it's irrelevant. Because I think that if you're dealing with, because in many loan cases there isn't a clear statement of I can, based on, in other words, if someone were to survey my assets, it's not like they would say, oh yeah, for sure he's gonna pay this back. Right, that's why I'm borrowing the money.
Yeah.
So I think you're right that there may be cases where it is clear that he expects to pay, but I'm not so sure that all cases will be so. So after the parentheses, he says, in this case in which I bought merchandise, I paid the money, and there's a condition that if he doesn't deliver the merchandise on time, he's going to have to pay a fine. Vitale and I'm over there. And then the seller contends, Dekeban shalotav o, lo nasan lo, shupata meaknas. And the seller of the merchandise who didn't deliver says, well, you never demanded the merchandise from me. You didn't come back to me and say deliver. Therefore, I didn't give it. The shupata meaknas. And therefore, he's going to be exempt from the fine. And this is where I brought in the first three sources. Like we in fact say regarding payment of a worker. Shim lo tavo eino over. The Torah says, biomo titein scharo. In the event that you hire a day laborer, you are obligated to pay him on the day that he works for you. However, if the laborer does not come to you and say, where is my salary? Then even though you may have some moral obligation to pay, In terms of financial obligations, you're exempt. He has to come to you and say, please pay me. He didn't do that, it's not your problem. So the Avodas HaGirshuni says, we're going to apply that also regarding the loan, regarding the merchandise and the late payment fine. The Erech Shai Dachara Ayasa. But the Erech Shai rejected that proof that the Avodas HaGirshuni brought. Dahasam, in that case, Kisheino Tovo Vade Mamtinlo. In the case of the worker, right, the worker who didn't make a claim on his salary, when he doesn't make the claim, he's certainly waiting to get paid. Right? He's just being patient. Avo benido in Avodas HaGirshuni, but in the Avodas HaGirshuni's case with the merchandise, Efshir Shalachein Lo Tava, it could be that this is why he didn't make a claim. Kadeshi Yischayev Biknas. He didn't make a claim because he wants the guy to owe him the fine. Oshi Yavad Lameka. Or he wants the transaction to be voided. Right? There's a reason why he didn't make the claim. He didn't make the claim because he wanted out, or he didn't make the claim because he wanted to get well, it depends on which side you're on. Sorry, the other way around. We're on the purchaser side. The purchaser didn't make a claim on the merchandise either because he wants the guy to pay him a fine, or because he decided he didn't want to go through with the transaction. So v'hela erech shai l'chaybo b'knas. So therefore, the erech shai says, in this case, there's no patience going on. The laborer is patient. The fellow who's buying the goods is not patient. He's tricky. He's not patient. So therefore, if you don't pay, if you don't deliver the goods, you're going to have to pay the knas. That was his position. I'm going to come back to the laborer in a minute. I just want to finish this clause here. Ubenachal Yitzchak Simon Tes, Hevi Midivay Avodas HaGirshuni. The Nachal Yitzchak is another work. He quotes the Avodas HaGirshuni. Dekol Shekein L'Sha'ar Chov She'eino Chayev B'li Tevia. He says, certainly then, when you're dealing with other types of loans, the other types of debts, one is not obligated to pay until the claim is made. V'sover, and he believed, Shebischar Sachir Bali Tiviya, in a case of an employee who has not claimed it, Eino Over Afilu Ba'aseh, when you don't pay, He didn't make a claim. You're not even in violation of the Torah's mitzvah of paying him on time. And then there's further debate on that score, the Minchas Pitim, and so on. Okay. That's as far as I wanted to go within the Pesach Choshen. But I wanted to come back to this point about the laborer and why I'm not obligated to pay him until he makes a claim. Take a look at the extra sheet, please. Source Aleph. Mishnah in Bava Metzia is the source for this idea that I'm not obligated to pay him until he makes a claim. Echad schar adam, ve'echad schar behema, ve'echad schar kelim. Whether you're talking about payment for a person's work, whether you're talking about rental of an animal, whether you're talking about rental of tools, of equipment, yesh bo mishum bi'amoti tein scharo. The rule of pay that day applies. Ve'yesh bo mishum lo salin pilasachirit chad boker, as well as the lo sase, the prohibition of don't keep his payment with you until morning. Pay that day. A Masai, when is this true? Bisman Shetabo, where the recipient of the money made the claim. Lo Tabo, Eino over Allah. If he didn't make the claim, you're not in violation. That's the Mishnah. Why? So the Gemara explains in source base. The Gemara comments on that Mishnah and quotes a Braisa, contemporary to the Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan, Lo Salin Bi'ulas Sakir, when the Torah says not to keep the payment with you, it says, Lo Salin Pilat Sakir Itchad Boker, don't keep it with you, don't keep his payment with you until morning. So Yachol Afiu Lo Tabaho, I might think you'd be liable even if he didn't claim it. Tamud Lomar Itcha, the Torah says, Itcha Ad Boker, don't keep it with you, Lidatcha, with your knowledge. What in the world does that mean? So in source Gimel, the Torah Tamima explains what this means. Rotzalomar lirtzoncha. Ladatcha means lirtzoncha, willingly. She'ein ha-mini'ah rak mi-mini'as ritzoncha l'salek lo bizmano. When are you going to be liable for withholding payment? If the only obstacle to payment is your decision not to pay him. If the only obstacle to the payment is you decided not to pay him, that's when you're liable. Avak shlo tava'o, but if he didn't ask you for it, nikar she'ein chafetz lakachas ot, that shows that he doesn't want it right now. He doesn't care whether it's right now or whether it's next week. He isn't insisting on same-day payment. That's the idea. Now, I have to emphasize here, in general, when you deal with matters like this, which are fundamentally contracts, in this case employer-employee, lender-borrower, seller-buyer, whatever, when you're dealing with contracts, in practical halacha, they're going to depend on community norms. The way people conduct themselves normally in business is going to rule the day. Whether to be lenient or to be strict, it applies both ways. So for example, the Torah says you have to pay same day. But if I live in a place where it's standard that people do work and they get paid within 30 days, then 30 days is the norm. And I have no reason to assume otherwise, unless he stipulates otherwise. It's a given that you work with the communal norm. That's a leniency for the boss. On the other hand, the Gemara talks about obligation in terms of food, breaks, whatever, or work hours in general for employees. You go by whatever standard practice is. If standard practice is that everybody gets a coffee break every hour and a half, 2 hours, then you have to provide that. That's the origin of the famous line, Minhag Mevatel Halacha, that custom overrides law. The origin of that is Yerushalmi, which is talking about how local custom, in terms of business practices, will override whatever is set down as the halacha. It's understood. You enter a contract with somebody else based on whatever standard expectations are. Clear? Okay. So to sum up what we've said, we brought the Erech Shai's position.
Is there a limit to that, though? Because custom overriding minhag can be dangerous. I mean, if you were in an area where... There must be a point where you cross over the ethical line. If local custom was to pay people a year late, to pay salaries a year late, then there'd have to be some sort of halachic limit on that.
What makes that unethical?
I don't know, I just feel instinctively it wouldn't be right.
I mean, you don't like it.
It's all unethical.
Well, that's the thing. In other words, if something is the standard practice in the area and it's exploitative of workers, you have to ask yourself why the economy functions that way. what's going on? Is it that labor, you know, is that jobs are so hard to find that people are taking that, you know, because that's all they can get? Like, what's behind this? Certainly, we don't believe that ethical treatment is governed solely by communal norms. If it now is ethical that you can whip your workers, that doesn't mean that we want you whipping your workers. But how you establish ethical norms is not simple and straightforward. The Torah gives you some guidance. Talk about timely payments would be one example. But it's not spelled out, I would say, in a 100% clear way. I sat on a panel about 7 or 8 years ago. This was right after the Rubashkin scandal broke. So I sat in a panel for the Rabbinical Council of America and the OU, trying to come up with some kind of ethical kashrut standards that they could now bring back to the companies and say, we want you to conform to this. And we had lawyers who knew this stuff, who knew that, you know, the food industry, and who knew employment law, and it was just like, it was an incredible nightmare trying to come up with something. And then you have to, of course, pitch it to all the different hashkafos to get them to buy into it. Let's just say it never actually came to fruition, but we had a pretty good document. I wrote the preamble. Well, that's right. So the Tava Yosher is one attempt to try to come up with it. The problem, literally, it's the mark of integrity. There's one in Israel, there's another one in the States, groups that have tried to come up with something that will work.
So what is a whole scheme of medical doctors?
The problem is that you end up with things that are very subjective, and that makes certain leaps that aren't necessarily justified. It's very hard to anchor this properly within halacha as well as law. It's not straightforward.
And then you get different practices in different businesses.
Yes. And
it's the same thing in every industry. So we have there's this massive discussion going on in the consumer durable space about production of goods in North America for overseas, done by people in Sri Lanka.
Right.
And in Malaysia, child labor, and all these other...
Well, that was exactly what I was going to say. You can't necessarily work with one set of standards everywhere, because if you try to apply your standards from North America and other countries, in other continents, you're actually going to end up doing an injustice to the people there. Like when you get horrified and say, well, there's child labor in Sri Lanka, the answer to that is, well, if you don't have child labor, they're going to starve. So, you know, it's very tricky trying to apply this across the board. That's indeed one of the problems that we ran into, was how to work that. Okay, but I just want to at least sum up what we've said. We saw the Erech Shai's position. The Erech Shai noted the problem, quoting the Or Zeruah, of when do we say that a loan will not be canceled by Shemitah, because you're not really oppressing the fellow. And we distinguish between the Yom Tov loan, which you're not allowed to claim, and the personal loan, where you simply said, I am not going to claim it, in which case you really could claim it if you chose to do so. And therefore, Shemitah will nullify it. And the point that emerged from all of that is that making a statement of, I'm not going to claim it, really isn't forgiveness, and really isn't suspension of your right to claim at all. And therefore, the borrower is not entitled, according to the Erech Shai, is not entitled to assume that this loan is no longer going to be claimed from him just because you didn't make a demand. He may be able to delay paying you back, but he can't assume that this is not going to be up for a claim. And the reason why I stress that is because last week we saw a source that wanted to argue that in the event that the lender didn't make a claim, and then the lender died, the heirs would not be able to claim it because their father forgave it. And what we see here is that it's not true. You can't interpret his silence as forgiveness. That was major point number one. Major point number two is that regarding this fine that you issue, which aside from the Ribbis discussion about how to do it, we say that there is a difference between the worker not claiming payment and the lender who has a fine to benefit not making a claim. The worker doesn't make a claim. It's clear he's being patient. He's saying, okay, see you maybe later. If the person, though, who has the fine doesn't make the claim, it's not because he's being patient, it's because he's waiting to catch you and make you pay him a fine. And therefore, again, this is not forgiven, and the fine will be due in the event that you don't pay him on time. So next time, God willing, we'll have to continue with the discussion that's in Sifkatan Yud Aleph, the issue of someone who took an oath saying that he's going to pay on time, and what his liability is if the claim isn't made.